Good morning, everyone. Can I try this without the microphone? It's good with the microphone. Okay. All right. Good morning. I really want to first begin by thanking Mrs. Siegel and by thanking Ricky. It's always an incredible pleasure and the privilege to be able to come to the OU Center, Baruch Hashem. Now, over the years, I've been here a couple of times and spoken to different groups, very often through Mrs. Siegel's Li'ela program. And it's always an incredible spiritual highlight. Coming to Eretz Yisrael is always filled with spiritual highlights for me and my family. And coming here to be able to learn Torah with such a group of distinguished women who are taking time from, I'm sure, their busy, hectic, and manic schedules to be able to build themselves spiritually is truly an incredible zechus. I want to thank Mrs. Siegel for inviting me. I want to thank Ricky for helping me with all of the logistical details. And I want to thank all of you for attending this beautiful program. I have to admit, when Mrs. Siegel told me that the topic that was going to be discussed was love, I said, you know, I've spoken Baruch Hashem over the years on many topics. Love is not really one of them. So when she told me we're going to do love, I said, great, I'm all for love. He has my vote. Not exactly sure what we are going to discuss or what exactly we're going to cover. So, you know, at first, I think when we often think about love, so first of all, our mind immediately shoots to marital love, to shalom bayis. But then as I got a little bit of a better feel as to what Mrs. Siegel was trying to accomplish, it became abundantly clear that the goal was not necessarily just to focus on one particular area of love, but to develop a thematic overtone, or perhaps better stated, a contextual or a theological, intellectual framework for what it is that love actually means, which then left me a little bit more dumbfounded, not exactly knowing where to start. So I know the topic I'm supposed to cover today is the definition and origin of love. I'm going to go a little bit off script. Because the truth is, definition of love, I'm a big believer that sometimes definitions are better understood from a context as opposed to a sentence. So the truth is, we could speak about the definition of love, and the truth is, you're all experts on the definition of love, because if you've ever attended a Sheva Brachos, so you know, of course, that the most well-known and well-used Devar Torah at every single Sheva Brachos is... Thank you very much. Oh, you have to attend more Sheva Brachos here. Right? At least in America, I should say. The most well-used, the most well-known and well-used Devar Torah at every Sheva Brachos is what's the etymological root of the word Ava? Have. Right? To give. And the chassan and kallah should be zocha to have a beautiful union where they give to one another, continuously give to one another. And of course, I'm not making light of it. It's a beautiful idea, and perhaps we would all agree the cornerstone not just for a meaningful and beautiful and passionate marriage, but the truth is the cornerstone of every life relationship is the ability to give. But I want to take a little bit of a step back. So hopefully by now you're a little bit familiar with the Mari Makomosht, with these sources. We're not going to go through all of them. There's more on the sheet than what we're going to cover today. But whatever we don't cover today is for your own edification. You could go, you could cover it again at a later time. But I just wanted to begin with a little bit of an overview, because the Torah uses the word Ava in many fascinatingly distinct and different contexts. So for example, the first time we find the word Ava, the first time we find the word love, number one, Vayiviyetz Yitzchak Ola Saraimo, Vaykaches Rivka Vahatihilo Isha Vayehaveha, Vaynachim Yitzchak Achareimo. End of Parshas Chayisara, Eliezer, the trusted servant of Avraham Avinu, brings back a wife for Yitzchak, and the Torah tells us something amazing. It tells us that Yitzchak loved Rivka. Now the truth is, we could do a whole shir on this, but we're not going to. Because again, Yitzchak, out of all of the Avos, is considered to be the least emotive. He is considered to be the least, he is the one, again, Yitzchak Avinu is Gevura, Yitzchak Avinu is, however you define that, strength and austerity. But the truth is, if you look at the Mefarshim, if you look at the commentaries, it is not just strength in his belief, but the truth is, Yitzchak Avinu had what we'll call emotional austerity as well. So the notion that the Torah goes ahead and chooses to record love, it's amazing. The Torah never tells us that Avraham Avinu loved Sara Imenu. Never tells us that. By Yaakov and his wives, of course, the Torah gets into that. We'll speak about that a little bit. In any event, the Torah gives us an example, ultimately, of Ava. We'll call this spousal love. Second type of love, number two, the Yisrael Ahaves Yosef Nikobanov. Ki ben zekunim hulo. Yaakov Avinu Yisrael loved Yosef from among all of his children. Ki ben zekunim hulo, because he was literally just the son of his old age. Va'asalo kison es pasim. Now it's very important to understand. What does that phrase mean? The Yisrael Ahaves Yosef Mikolbanov. He loved him most. But what else does it tell us about Yaakov Avinu's relationship with his other sons? He loved them as well. This is a very important idea. Yaakov Avinu loved all of his sons. Yaakov made the terrible parental error of favoritism. In fact, the Talmud says, because of the five extra, shkalim that Yaakov Avinu spent on Yosef more than all of his other children, niskalgil hadavar, the matter took on a life of its own, v'yardu avosenu lemitzrayim. But it's important to understand, the Torah is not chas v'shalom telling us that Yaakov loved Yosef to the exclusion of his other children. The Torah is just simply telling us that Yaakov loved Yosef more than his other children. So the second type of love the Torah tells us is what we'll call familial love. So we have spousal love, which is a very unique type of love. Familial love, you love the people in your family, hopefully. Take a look at number three. Lo sikom v'lo sitor es b'nei amecha. Do not take revenge, nor should you bear a grudge against the members of your people. V'ahavta l're'acha kamocha ani Hashem. So what type of love is this? Right. So this is very important. This is what we'll call at first glance interpersonal love. But here the Torah is also telling us a very important lesson. Torah does not just simply say v'yahavta l're'acha, rather what does it say? V'yahavta l're'acha kamocha, which presupposes that what? That you must love yourself. So it is here that the Torah is teaching us that we'll call it self-love. I have to love, and this is very important. Because unfortunately, there are many people who walk around in life who do not love themselves, who don't even like themselves. And we'll discuss how this is an incredible impediment to forging any other kind of meaningful life love. So Torah is teaching us two types of loves here. Number one, what we'll call self-love. And number two, what we'll call interpersonal love. Loving the other. So again, spousal love, familial love, interpersonal love, self-love. Now I want to just point out, I'm not conveying these in any order of importance. I'm just conveying them to you as the text draws them out. Next, number four. Torah tells us that we must take special care with how we treat the ger, how we treat the convert. You must love him as you love yourself. What type of love is this? Empathic love, good. Is the coffee caffeinated or is decaf today? Right. I'm still on jet lag. You guys have no excuses. Right. This is very important. This is what we'll call loving the one who is different. Meaning that if you look at all of the loves until now, spousal love, familial love, even v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha, re'acha has a connotation of relationship, someone with whom I share a common denominator. Who is the ger? Who is the convert? Convert might be one that I share very little with. The convert and I have very different life stories, have very different backgrounds, have obviously very different familial structures. But the Torah is going out of its way to teach us, it's easy to love someone who is like you. It's easy to love someone with whom you identify. It is easy to love with someone with whom you share common life experiences. But the Torah is telling us, if you have them as a ger, the ger is a paradigm. The ger is not just specifically the convert. The ger is any person who is different and dissimilar to who you are. Jewish love cannot simply extend to others. And this is so important. And again, I think I have a shiur in next week about the 3 weeks. Semir Tzashem will speak a little bit about how important Avas Chinam is. But this is a lesson. This is the challenge of our dar. You know, it's an amazing, it's just an aside. You know, the challenge of our generation is not observance. And the challenge of our generation is not learning Torah. Because the truth is we have unprecedented levels of Talmud Torah. And the truth is even the realm of observance. As much as, again, there are still challenges, but the opportunities for observance are so radically different. Thank God. I remember my grandfather, Zichron Livracha, when he came to America after the war, every Erev Shabbos, I'm sure many of you could identify with this also from your grandparents as well, lost his job every single Erev Shabbos. because he was told, if you don't come in on Shabbos, you do not have a job. And every single week, he lost a job for Shemir Shabbos. It's unheard of today. Forget about here in Israel, thank God. I'm talking about even in America. You know, even in Golos, Baruch Hashem, we live in such an age and such a time now where the truth is, for the most part, our religious ideals and beliefs are not challenged. Our challenge is learning to love the other, is learning to love the one who is ultimately different. That is the great challenge we have, and that has always been, for the last 2,000 years, the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael. Let's go on, number 5. What is this? This is love of the divine. Okay, so this one is, or I should say, love the divine. I will call it love of the divine. And lastly, if you take, so far we've seen now 5 different types of love. Spousal love, familial love, interpersonal love, self-love, loving the one who is different, and love of the divine. I threw in over here number 6, although we're not going to get into this at all over the course of today's shiur. The Torah uses love in a radically different context, in a context that seems to be totally out of place. The Atah, number 6, B'ni Shema B'Kolila Sharnay Mitzavah Osach. Rivka Imenu tells Yaakov, when she went to Yaakov to be able to get the brachos from his father, from Yitzchak, she tells him, listen to what I'm telling you. Lechna alatzon, v'kach l'nisham shnei gideizim tovim, v'aseh osam mat'amim la'avicha, ka'asher ahev. Go ahead and fetch me 2 goats, and I will make these delicacies for your father like he loves. So I often speak about the idea that love is one of the most overused words. And the problem is, when you overuse a word, it loses its meaning. So in the same sentence, a person could say, I love my wife, I love my children, and I love pizza. Right? I love my parents, and I love football. Right? So it's fascinating to see how the Torah uses that word love in this context. First of all, and again, by Yitzchak Avinu, which is quite strange. But again, we're not going to get into it. I'm just pointing out to you that the Torah also brings down this 6th form of love, which seems to be, for lack of a better term, what we'll call a material love. So we have spousal love, familial love, interpersonal love, self-love, loving the one who is different, love of the divine, and material love. Material love we're going to leave on the side for a different time. So let's begin to analyze. So what I'd like to try to do today, now that we've outlined all the different types of love, what I would like to try to be able to focus on is how to begin to create a platform or a foundation to become a loving individual. Meaning all of these loves are important. I have to love myself. I have to love the other. I have to love my spouse. I have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have to love the one who is different. So almost like, what is the emotional foundation? What is the cognitive foundation that one must build in order to be able to become a loving individual? So I want to actually begin the conversation from a kapitel in Tehillim. So if you take a look at number 7. So this is kapitel Lamed Zayin 37. So David HaMelech says over here, the David. So first of all, interestingly enough, when David HaMelech says, you have different kapitlach that open up different ways, it's important to know, we have a very emotional connection to Tehillim, which is why whenever there's difficulty, what's the first thing the Jew does? It's a trick question, right? No, when there are times of difficulty, the first thing you do is you roll up your sleeves and you see what you can do to ameliorate your situation. You put in your hishtadlus. That's the first thing a Jew does. Concurrently, after you put in your hishtadlus, or even while you're putting in your hishtadlus, you could daven, you could pray, you could do all those things as well. But what the Rimono Shel Olam wants us is that if we encounter a problem, he wants us to problem solve. He wants us to do. He wants us to act. He wants us to somehow to be architects of our own salvation, not just simply to go ahead and rely on him for everything. In any event, as we're putting in our hishtadlus, we roll up, right, rolling up our sleeves, and we open up our sefer Tehillim. Now, the truth is, it's interesting. You're a group of Hebrew speakers, so maybe it's a little bit different. But at least I know that for many of us who are not native Hebrew speakers or not fluent in Hebrew, so often Tehillim is an interesting thing. Because a person could say Tehillim, and if you ask them, "Nu, what did you just say? Like, what are the meanings of the word?" No idea. No idea. But I'll tell you, but therein lies the profundity of Sefer Tehillim. The amazing part of Tehillim is, Tehillim, we connect to it in a soulful way, that transcends the meaning of the words. I don't even have to understand the words to know that somehow, some way, what I have just said has had a profound spiritual cathartic effect and impact on me, and perhaps again on my situation as well. That being said, Tehillim becomes even more impactful if one actually understands what it is that they're saying. And to take it even a little bit further, we know Sefer Tehillim is David HaMelech's diary. Sefer Tehillim is where David HaMelech described all of the different circumstances and situations through which he lived. So there are certain kapitach that we know specifically line up with certain life, with certain Davidic life events. Other kapitach which are a little bit more generic, speaking about general meta-life themes. But everything is a window into David HaMelech's soul. So this is very important. So for example, there are some kapitach that start Mizmor LeDavid, some start LeDavid Mizmor, and some just start LeDavid. What does it mean when a kapitach starts LeDavid? So the Malbim explains very beautifully that LeDavid, Mizmor LeDavid, and LeDavid Mizmor usually convey some element of prophecy. Whether it's self-initiated prophecy or prophecy that devolved from above, LeDavid is David HaMelech saying, I'm not speaking to you in a prophetic overtone. I'm just simply talking, as we say, Dvarim Hayotzim Min Halev. I just want to tell you what's on my mind. And it's amazing when you see these kapitlach, because here we're gaining incredible and profound insights just into the soul of David HaMelech. So look what he writes over here. LeDavid, Al Tischa B'Mereim, Altikani Be'Osa'adah. We're not going to read all of this. I'm just going to give you a little bit of an overview of David. I'm just using the English here. Do not compete with the evildoers. Do not envy those who commit injustice. Ki kechatsir meheru yimalu ukiyerek desha yibolu. For they will be speedily cut off like grass and wither like green vegetation. Betach ba'ashem va'aseh tov. Shechan aretz ure'e emuna. So literally translated, trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and be nourished by faith. So this idea of David HaMelech, it's not immediately clear exactly what he's talking about, especially someone asked me before. This opening phrase, Al tischar b'mereim, don't compete with evildoers, Al tekane be'osa avla, don't envy those who commit injustice. What does that mean? I don't envy those who commit injustice. And why would I? What exactly would I be competing with the evildoers about? Skip down to the last pasuk that I quoted for you, where pasuk yud, va'od ma'at ve'in rasha, because literally a little bit longer. You can see the English translations on the next page. A short while longer, and the wicked man is not here. Visponanta amikamo ve'inena, and you shall look at his place, and he is not. So what is this kapitel referring to? So just as a general overview, if you take a look at number 8. So the Radak comments over, and the Radak says the following. So take a look at number 8, the Radak. L'David ha'tischar b'mereim, l'chol ha'shomea musra omer. So David HaMelech says, whoever will listen to my musar, to my instruction, should hear the following. Av tischar, ulefi shezachar machshavas harisham maseim, amar shlo yifuta adam lahem bir oso hatzlachasam, ki lo samod, ki acharisam lera. So the Radak says, David HaMelech, there are certain topics David HaMelech speaks out extensively over the course of Sefer Tehillim, and one of them is the concept of tzadik viralo, rasha v'tovlo. Now, here's what's interesting. We're familiar with that concept, that the righteous suffer, the wicked prosper. Now, the truth is, if we're honest with ourselves, the fact that the righteous suffer by itself perhaps doesn't bother me as much. Meaning, if everyone suffered, right? If suffering was just part of the nature and the fabric of the human condition, then what? It's the way it is. You know, I mean, again, if that's the way it is, it's just like nobody complains, oh, this gravity. You know, never. I wish there wasn't gravity. You know, I would love to be able to get from here to my house with just one jump, and that's it. Why? Because gravity is a fact of life. It impacts everyone. We all live with it. So it's an interesting thing in the way people think. Any constraint that is part of the fabric of the human condition, meaning anything that all of us experience, no one really complains about. It's when we perceive inequalities. So the problem is, tzadik viralo by itself, if everybody suffered, right? Meaning if life didn't go according to plan for everyone, I could accept that. I wouldn't necessarily be happy with it, but I could accept it. What sometimes creates a certain level of angst is what? It's not just tzadik viralo, It's Rasha Batovlo. It's the idea that why is it that the righteous prosper? Why is it that I could do everything right in life or try to do everything right in life, and yet life never goes my way, and yet someone who appears that doesn't care about anything and throws literally spiritual caution to the wind and is totally on the outs with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at least the way I define it, lives a beautiful life, is very happy, seems to be relatively carefree, right? Seems to really enjoy every moment of life. So David HaMelech writes about this extensively. So according to the Radak, that's what David HaMelech is talking about in this capital. L'David, and remember, this is also very important. I think we're speaking about David HaMelech Wednesday night. I'm not going to go into this now. Speaking more of David HaMelech, David HaMelech had a ridiculously turbulent life, a terrible, terrible life. You know, we say David HaMelech struggled with everything. He struggled with family, shalom bayis. He struggled with his children. He struggled with enemies, external and internal. He struggled with health. You know, the only thing David HaMelech didn't struggle with was? He even struggled with the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The only thing he didn't struggle with was parnasa. And that's one of the perks of being king, right? So when you're king, the one thing you don't have to worry about is parnasa. Now again, we know, so many of us who struggle with parnasa, it's a big thing. It certainly is, and it weighs very heavily. Okay, so that's the one thing he didn't struggle. He was rich, he was wealthy, but everything else that you could possibly imagine, even his emunah, we'll talk about that more on Wednesday night, he struggled with. So according to the Radak L'David, David HaMelech is telling us, if you want to know what's happening in my heart, if you want to know what's happening in my soul, if you want a window into my deepest thoughts and what it is that I struggle with, so David HaMelech says to us, going back for just a moment, Al tischar b'mireyim, don't compete with the evildoers, Al tekar b'osavla, don't envy those who do that which is wrong. And I know it's easy to envy them. I know that it's desirous to want to emulate them because look, looks like everything's going right for them. They look so happy. They look so content. Life looks so easy. But David HaMelech tells us in this capital, don't compete, don't be jealous for the simple reason, because their enjoyment, their happiness, their success is temporal and finite. Ultimately, the repercussions for their actions and their way of life will ultimately be felt for all eternity. Al tischar line number three, number eight. Al tischar tzor lomar al tisarev. Don't go ahead and try to get involved with them. Don't try to compete with them. Shlomo Melech is telling us, even though it looks like the wicked have a good life and everything is going great, don't compete. Don't be jealous. Because acharisem lomar, at the end of the day, everything we do, everything we every action we engage in, the way we live, ultimately catches up with us. Rashi number 9, va'od ma'at, kishetamtin od ma'at, tira ki'en arasha. Just wait a little bit. Wait a little bit, because you know what the amazing part is? The wicked disappear, and the righteous endure. Visponanta al mekomo, Rashi says, second line, v'tistakil al mekom shahayasham, ve'enenu kimeis va'avad. You will see ultimately again, the wicked will very quickly disappear, and the righteous will still remain. Ibn Ezra, number 10, va'od dom ma'at. This is a very interesting choice of words. Dom ma'at. So dom sounds like from what? We know that word? Vayidom aron. Right? So dom means not just quiet, but absolutely still. Dom ma'at, just still yourself. V'tira be'enecha yom ha'karas ha'rasha niskar. Davidov speaks about over and over and safer to him, the notion of staying power. That sometimes you just have to be patient, you have to wait, and you will see that things have a way of working out on a universal level. Doesn't mean things work out the way that I want them to work out. It doesn't mean things go according to my plan. But don't, just quiet yourself, still yourself, and you will see ultimately righteousness endures, wickedness perishes. But I want to share with you what I think is a magnificent piece. And I know all of you have had a chance to see it already now. So it's a long piece. We're not going to do all of it. But I just want to use this piece of Rabbi Nachman. Now, Rabbi Nachman, I purposely included a little biography of Rabbi Nachman on the fourth page of this packet. You can look at it a little bit later on. You can see Rabbi Nachman is born in 1772. And dies in 1810. So there are conflicting accounts. Some say Rabbi Nachman died at 38. Some say Rabbi Nachman died at 39. Now, just I want to just point out to you something absolutely amazing. One thing is, Rabbi Nachman died a young man, and Rabbi Nachman had a very hard life. Rabbi Nachman lost two children in infancy. Rabbi Nachman himself died of tuberculosis. He died of illness. He didn't obviously have natural causes at the age of 38, 39. The reason why this is important is twofold. First of all, one of the greatest disservices we do to ourselves, this is just an editorial comment, not part of the shiur. One of the greatest disservices we do to ourselves is we kick the proverbial can down the road. That we always assume, I know there are things I have to accomplish, I know that there are things I want to do, but it's okay, there's plenty of time. There's not always plenty of time. Can you imagine had Rabbi Nachman said, hey, you know what, I'm in my 30s, what's the big deal? This resonates with me because I'm 38, so this resonates incredibly with me. So, can you imagine Rabbi Nachman said, you know what, I have plenty of time. I have plenty of time out of my 40s and my 50s and my 60s. That's when I'll really get serious about life. That's when I'll really accomplish what the world would have lost had Rabbi Nachman not self-actualized in his early. Now, Rabbi Nachman already self-actualized already in his teens and already in his 20s. But it's an incredible thing. We don't know. I don't mean this in a morose way, but we don't know how much time we have in this world. We don't know. And that's why a person has to maximize every single moment, every single day, because this way, if Chas Hashem, a person is taken at an early time, and it certainly does happen, unfortunately, a person knows that they leave behind a legacy. A person knows that they've accomplished what they were supposed to accomplish in this world. So let's take a look at Rabbi Nachman. And Rabbi Nachman says over here something absolutely amazing. Number 11. Duh. Rabbi Nachman says you have to judge every person favorably. And Rabbi Nachman says even someone who you think is a Rasha Gamer, who's totally evil. Now again, I want to be clear. Rabbi Nachman is not talking about every single evil. There are certain people who are inherently evil. Rabbi Nachman is not applying this standard to Hitler, Yimach Shem over Zichro, is not applying this standard to any of us, of our Rishoim. He's talking about a fellow member of Klal Yisrael. That even a fellow member of Klal Yisrael, who you think is a Rasha Gamer, however you define that, who you think is a Rasha Gamer, you have to search out and you have to find within him or within her some tov. Sheba Osa Hama'at in a Rasha. Because every single person, says Rabbi Nachman, has a little piece of them that is not tarnished and is not said. Rabbi Nachman speaks about this concept in many different places. The truth is, Rav Kook speaks about this concept in Oros HaRi'iyah by Chanukah. He says over here that this was the miracle of the Pach Shemen. The Pach Shemen represents that little reservoir of holiness that even when everything else is tainted, even when everything else is tarnished, the Jew always has that Pach Shemen Hamunach Bechosamo Shel Kohen Gadol. It does not matter how bad you do. It doesn't matter how low you allow yourself to sink. There is no way, no matter, I'm telling you, no matter how hard you try, don't try, but no matter how hard a person may try to divest themselves of all of their holiness or spirituality, it is impossible. The Jew is told that there's always some pocket of holiness that is left untarnished. Rabbi Nachman says, even a person who you think is a Rasha Gamer, even someone who you think is absolutely evil, there's always some good. And therefore, if you find them a little bit of good, you judge them favorably. So Rabbi Nachman here gets a little bit more esoteric than what we're going to do today. But Rabbi Nachman says something amazing. Rabbi Nachman says that you have the ability to actually cause someone to be judged favorably, and you have the ability to get someone to do tshuva. How can you be the facilitator of someone else's tshuva? That if you find the good that is within them, ultimately Rabbi Nachman says, "Ayidezet ma'ala osa be'emes lekaf suchus v'yuchal lahashiva b'tshuva." Just by the way, if you want to define this concept in very non-esoteric terms, Rabbi Nachman is actually advancing an incredible idea. Most people who ultimately choose not to do good in life, very often it's because they don't have someone in their corner who believes in them. If you believe in someone and you tell them that you believe in them, and you tell them, I know that you could be so much better, not like in a paternalistic type of fashion, not you know like in a condescending way, but I believe in you. This is the method of Aaron HaKohen. If you believe in someone and you build them up, that's what Rabbi Nachman is saying, Va'al Yidezeh Yuchal Hashiva B'tshuva. Ultimately, a person knows that someone believes in them. We all know there is nothing better in life, whether it's a spouse or whether it's a friend or whether it's a parent. who believes in you, it's the most empowering thing in the world. You do this for someone, even if they're a Rasha Gomer, sometimes you could enable them and give them the strength to be able to do tshuva. V'zeh b'chinas va'od, Rabbi Nachman reads this in to the Pasuk in Tehillim, which is quite amazing. V'zeh b'chinas va'od ma'at ve'in Rasha, v'hisbonan ta'al mekomo ve'in enos. Rabbi Nachman says, this is the pshat. Now you have to understand something. Now Rabbi Nachman says, this is the translation of the Pasuk in Tehillim. Now you have to understand something. So people, when they hear like Hasidish, and say, so it's a Hasidish of art. Right? You have to understand something. Rabbi Nachman was not like sitting there, it's like Erev Shabbos, I need a good vart for the Shabbos table. You know, how can I can age something out? Holy people see things in a different way. They just have different vision. They see things. You and I see things one way. I mean, you're all holy. I see things one way, right? Holy people see things in a different way. Rabbi Nachman looked at this pasuk in Tehillim. For him, this is what David HaMelech was saying. What was David HaMelech saying? Let's read it inside. Hainu, sha pasuk masir ladun asakal asakal lekaf zchus. The pasuk is telling us to judge every person favorably. Therefore says that's a pshat. What do you have to do? What's the job in life? When you look at another person, and sometimes, unfortunately, all you see is negativity and bad things, find the old ma'at. Find the little bit in the individual that is not spiritually tarnished. Find the little bit that is not spiritually sullied. Find the little bit that is still holy, that is still beautiful and still pure. V'hisbonanta. Contemplate and focus yourself on that. And what's going to happen as a result? Or v'hisbonanta al mekamo ve'enena. Then you'll look back to find that Rasha, and what's going to happen? You won't be able to see them. Why won't you be able to see them? Because the person ultimately who I viewed as a Rasha to begin with, now I've changed my perspective. And now suddenly I choose not just to simply see the negativity, but I choose to see the good in them. So that when I look back and I try to find that person I thought was a Rasha originally, now all I see is what? The Od Ma'at. You know the amazing part is? Says Rabbi Nachman, once you find the Od Ma'at, something amazing happens, which is what? You begin to see and to find more and more good in the individual. What begins at first as Od Ma'at ultimately transforms into more and more. Until the Sponanto, you'll try to find that Russia that you saw in the first place. You'll try to see who that Russia was. Ve'einenu, and he's no longer there. Rabbi Nachman goes on. He says, Ki eich efshar shelo asa iza mitzvah ol dover tov miyamav. Sa'ay, you'll say to yourself, but one second, there are some really bad people out there. Some really bad people who, again, I don't think have any redeeming qualities. Rabbi Nachman says, impossible. Everyone has at least a redeeming quality. It's impossible for someone not to have done a mitzvah, even by accident. He says, Va'ayidezeh. Now, I'll tell you just a beautiful ma'aseh. There was once a man who came over to Rabbi Yitzhak, but just to illustrate this point, once a man came over to Rabbi Yitzhak, another great Hasidic master, and he said, Rebbe, he said, the Torah is false. I don't know if the Torah is false, because it says in Kriyat Shema, Va'ayayim shamoa tishmoa mitzvosai. You say every single day, if you will listen to my mitzvos. And what does the Torah say? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reward us with incredible material bounty. So this man says to Rabbi Yitzchak, he says, I'll tell you, I don't keep one word of the Torah. Not only that, I flagrantly flaunt my violation of the Torah. And I am fabulously wealthy. I have everything I could possibly want. To which the Rebbe said, the fact that you can ask that question means that you've read Kriyat Shema at least one time in your life, and there's not enough money in the world to be able to pay you for that mitzvah. That's Rabbi Nachman saying, every single person has something. Every single person at least has done something. Ma'at tov dan osol When you find a little bit of the good in the other, when you focus a little bit more on just that od ma'ad, and it might be very little to begin with, through that, you're able to allow a person to be judged favorably, and as we said before, you're actually able to create the spiritual energy that enables a person to do tshuva. Ach yosha b'tshuva ayideh v'zehu od ma'at. They in Russia. Fine. Rabbi Nachman repeats himself a little bit. Let's skip down. So go to the next paragraph. D. Like I said, I want to be clear. Anything that I'm skipping, I'm not skipping it because it's not important. It's all important. I'm just skipping it because of time. Because I know you have another shiur at 11:30. Is it next year?
Yeah.
Correct? Okay, so fine. So look at paragraph D. Rabbi Nachman here says something very important. V'chein. Tzorich ha'adam limtso gam ba'atzmo. And says Rabbi Nachman, this is not just true with how we relate to others, but it's true with how we relate to ourselves. Ki ze yadua, this is perhaps the most famous statement of Rabbi Nachman, shetzarech ha'adam lizaher ma'od lihios besimcha tamit. Now I want to clarify this point, right? Rabbi Nachman says this multiple times throughout the Likutei Maharan, mitzvah gedolios besimcha tamit. It's a great mitzvah to always be besimcha. Now I want to be clear, this does not mean that you have to buy a van, put speakers on the top, right, and start dancing on top of it. Now if you want to do that gay gizmo to hate, you certainly can. That's not, I want to be clear, that's not what Rabbi Nachman meant. And I'll tell you the reason for that. Nothing wrong with it, but mitzvah can't be understood literally. Why? Because there are times in life where simcha is aser. There are times in life where external displays of joy are prohibited, right? We're coming up on such a period of the year like that, right? Again, we know that literally on Tisha B'Av, Rav Soloveitchik points out that on Tisha B'Av, a person is, the halacha says it's like Shiva. So like Shiva, according to the Rav, the three weeks are like Yud Beis Chodesh, like the 12 months of mourning. The 9 days are like Shloshim, it's like a reverse Avelos. The 9 days are like Shloshim, and the Rav explains that Tisha B'Av itself is like Shiva. You are not permitted to be besimcha. So what does that mean? There are other times throughout the year, there are other life events where besimcha is not. So when Rabbi Nachman says mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamin, it does not mean dancing and smiling and always be extraordinary. And I'll tell you even more. If you know anything about Rabbi Nachman's life, you will know that Rabbi Nachman struggled with periods of depression. I don't know clinical depression, but Rabbi Nachman struggled with times where he was down, where he was so sad. And he writes about where he had to struggle to pull himself up. So what does he mean when he says, mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid? And here's the definition. He says, a person has to try to push away depression as much as possible. Says Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman really is talking about his own life experiences. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm not happy with who I see. I look at myself and I realize, you know what? I'm a shell of what I could be. I'm a shell of what all the potential that I have. I see that I'm filled with sin. What's mara shechora? Depression. Rabbi Nachman says something amazing. Rabbi Nachman says, everyone thinks, we have the Yetzirah. So first of all, too many of us walk around with the juvenile understanding of the Yetzirah. He's not the little red guy with a pitchfork and horns, right, standing on your shoulder. Say, come on, go sin, you can do it. Hey, that's not how it works. Rabbi Nachman says, do you know what the Yetzirah, first of all, interestingly, Rabbi Nachman, and many others say this as well, the Yetzirah actually doesn't entice you to sin. Instead, the greatest instrument of the Yetzirah is, he tries to push you to think of yourself as a nothing. Because the truth is, if I have low self-esteem, if I have low self-worth, there's no reason to push myself to be great, because I'm not great. I'm a nothing. And if I'm a nothing, my actions don't matter. If I'm a nothing, God doesn't really care about me. If I'm a nothing, then the truth is, the way I live my life has absolutely no importance. Rabbi Nachman says, diminishing a person's self-worth, allowing a person to slip into a depression, those are the greatest tools of the Yetzirah. So Rabbi Nachman says, what happens is sometimes a person looks at themselves, and this is important, it's an important exercise in life, to sometimes look in the mirror, not just in an external sense, but to look internally as well, and to see, do I really measure up? Do I know, all of us know deep down the people we can be. And the truth is, if we're honest with ourselves, most of us come to the conclusion that the people we are is not the people we can be. Most of us fall short of the expectations we should have of ourselves. And the truth is, I have to tell you, I don't know most of you, but I will tell you that if you are the person you want to be, this is just my opinion, chances are you're setting your expectations too low. The idea of the Jew is always, you want to set yourself, a Jew has to live their life thinking, you know what, I could always be better. I have to be happy with what I've done, but I know I'm not maximizing my potential. I know that I'm not where I should be. I know I'm not where I could be. It's important. Rabbi Nachman says it's a double-edged sword. Because on one hand, I'm pushing myself to be more. On the other hand, sometimes if I'm too critical of myself, it could lead me to be depressed. Because then if I'm critical of myself, look at everything I've done wrong. Look at all of my chatoim. Look how I've fallen short of the mark on so many ways. And that creates the marsh chora. That could create a depression. And where there is that depression, a person could ultimately fall into this pit, fall into this abyss of depression from which they're never able to get out. Afa pikein, asa lo lipo mizeh. Rabbi Nachman says a person can't fall into the grips of depression. Rak tzarech lechapes velimso ba'atzmo ezo ma'at tov. Rabbi Nachman says, it's not just true for the other, but even for myself, I have to be able in myself to find what? Ma'at tov. Even a little bit of good. Ki eich efshar shalo asa minyam av eza mitzvah davar tov. Because here's the amazing part. No matter how much I feel I'm underperforming, no matter how many things I feel I've done wrong, all of us have done at least one good thing. And Baruch Hashem, it's more than one good thing. All of us have done multiple good things. There's still some ma'at tov. Va'av kishem shemaschil yistakil ba'osa davar tov. Hora shu gam ki malep etzam ve'en bo mesom. But then once again, the Yitzhara kicks in. And then what happens? Once I identify the good that I've done, so what does the Yitzhara say? Oh, that wasn't so good. That wasn't so good. Oh, that chesed you did? You didn't do that to help someone else. You did that for your own self-aggrandizement. I did that for my own covenant. I did that because I wanted to be respecting the eyes of others. So the Yitzhara works. And again, remember, these are the internal mechanisms that our Kodesh Baruch Hu created us with. Because these mechanisms, these sometimes what appear to be self-sabotaging mechanisms, these are the very engines of growth. This is how we grow in life, by going through these processes. So then I begin to identify the good. Then the internal Yetzirah says, ah, that's not so good. I can poke holes in the good. You didn't do this well or that well or this well. Even when you did that, you did it for your own covet, for your own ego. And what happens? I begin to see that even the good things I've done are still filled with many holes. Al kol ze, ech efshar shelo yihye ba'osa ha-mitzvah v'adavar shebekdusha eiza ma'at tov. Ki al kol panim ech shu, al kol panim haya eiza nekuda tova v'amitzvah v'adavar tov she'asa. Ski tzarech ha'adam lechapes ulevakish limtso ba'atzmo eiza ma'at tov. Listen to these words. Kidei lahacheyos es atzmo. Rabbi Nachman says, the most important thing in life is to try to find some good within. And even if that good is not perfect, and even if that good is not absolute, each and every one of us has some nekudas hatov, some little ray of light, has some little sapling of good that we've cultivated within. And Rabbi Nachman says, focus on that. Interesting that Rabbi Nachman says, that's the meaning. Mitzvah gedola lihios b'simcha tamid. What does that mean? It's a mitzvah to always be happy. It means that it's a mitzvah. Why should I be happy? Because it's a mitzvah to always recognize that I possess some good within. That even in those moments where I have messed up so badly, and we all have moments like that, even in those moments where I feel that I have divested myself of all of my holiness, even in those moments where I feel that I have hit rock bottom, Rabbi Nachman says, mitzvah gedola lihios b'simcha tamid. Why? Because again, from the pasuk in Tehillim, va'od ma'at ve'in rasha. Because each and every one of us has that little bit that's good, that little bit that's not tarnished, that little bit that's not sullied, that little bit that's not spiritually compromised. Focus on that good. And if you focus on that good, then what? Then you'll be besimcha. Why are we besimcha? Not because I'm perfect, but because, oh, I haven't lost it all. And the amazing part is, as long as I know that I haven't lost all of my good, the beauty of that is, I know that there's something with which to build. There's chomer, there's building material. I could build myself back up. It may be a long journey. It may be a long time. But at least I know I am not beyond repair. I'm not beyond salvation. Rabbi Nachman goes on. He says, skip down to paragraph G. Again, I encourage you all, read this on your own, learn this on your own. But paragraph G. He says, Va'al yidei kain, excuse me, Va'al kain, ayidei shena maniach lahapi la satsmo. We're not going to get into this now. Right? This again, like you, we could make a whole seminar just about this. That's his Rabbi Nachman. But just for our purposes today, so remember, just follow Rabbi Nachman is accomplishing so far. So we've begun first with this capital of Tehillim. Rabbi Nachman teaching us the idea that even when you see someone who is a Rasha, our job as the other is to see Va'od Ma'at Ve'in Rasha, to find a little piece of the individual that's not evil, to find a little bit of good that exists within every individual. And Rabbi Nachman says, oh, by the way, that little good that you ultimately strive to aspire and to see within someone else, ultimately you should recognize that what? It goes ahead and you have it inside as well. And therefore, when you get down, when you get upset, when you feel compromised in life, just realize mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. Why? Because va'od ma'at ve'in rasha. Each of us have that little piece that's not compromised. Rabbi Nachman says, and as a result, and this is quite beautiful, he says, as a result of realizing that I have some good within, as a result of realizing mitzvah gedolios besimcha tamid, as a result of realizing va'od ma'at ve'in rasha, that's when we could begin to sing. You could begin to sing nigunim. Now, what does that mean? Va'azai, turn the page. Va'azai u'yochol lehispala u'lezamer u'lehodos la'ashem. It is only then that you can go ahead and praise and sing and daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? And this is very important. Ki zeh yadua shekisha ha'adam, listen to how important this is. Kisha ha'adam nofel bidaito machmas gashmiyuso u'ma'asav ha'ro'im sherosh u'rachok ma'od ma'od min HaKadosh be'emes azai al pirov eino yokol hispala klal machmaseh. Rabbi Nachman advances something that is of incredible importance. If you are not happy with yourself, if you cannot see the good within, if you don't have positive self-esteem, a positive self-worth, positive self-image, you cannot have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can only approach God with a sense of self. Only if, and this is, you know, when Mrs. Siegel first called me about this topic, and she was talking about all the different types of love, so we're talking about the order, so I mentioned to her that I thought that the only appropriate order is to first go ahead and begin with a discussion of loving oneself, then loving the other, and then loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because if you don't love yourself, you can't love someone else, which of course makes sense, because if I don't see the good in me, it's impossible to see the good in the other. And if you don't love yourself and you can't love the other, you certainly can't love HaKadosh Baruch. And that's exactly what Rabbi Nachman is saying. Rabbi Nachman is saying, if you want to know the need for mitzvah gedol lios besimcha, tamid, the need for od na'at ve'in rasha, it's the only way to sing. It's the only way to daven. It's the only way to have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch. You know, Rav Soloveitchik, we'll stick to this. So he goes on, he says, we're now on the pages aren't numbered. We're now on the paragraph right before each, but about four lines down from the top. He says, "Azal pirov eino yochol v'hispalo klal machmaze ve'eino yochol liftoach piv klal machmas godel ha'atzvus v'hamora shechora v'akvedu shenofal alav." It is impossible to open up your mouth to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is impossible to pray. It's impossible to connect. It's impossible to forge a meaningful relationship if you are not happy with who you are. Aval, kishu mechaye es atzma pia etan iskalael. But when you bring yourself back to life, based on the advice Rabbi Nachman says that I told you before, dahainu sha'afa pisha de'aba atzmo shiyesh l'ma'asim ro'im v'chatoam harbe ma'od. Again, Rabbi Nachman is very clear. It's very important to know what I am and what I'm not. So I have to be ever cognizant and ever aware of my shortcomings and of my faults. I can't ignore those. I can't sweep those under the rug. But while I'm paying attention to those, I also have to simultaneously pay attention to the good that I have. Even when you're focusing on that which you have to improve, you have to simultaneously focus on that which you have that is good. And you bring yourself back to life and you make yourself happy with this. When you go ahead and you bring yourself, you nurse yourself back to life by focusing on the good that you possess, only then can you connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only if you feel good about yourself, only if you recognize that you possess good within, only then can you come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one more, listen to this. So that's what it means when it says, I will sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'odi. And says Rabbi Nachman, what's Odi? Rabbi Nachman posits, Odi means Od Sheyesh Bi. What does it mean? The Od Sheyesh Bi? Od Ma'at Ve'ein Rasha. Only way I could come to sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Azam Alakai went Ba'odi, when I recognize the Od. When I recognize the Od Sheyesh Bi, the Od Ma'at Ve'ein Rasha, when I recognize the little bit of extra within me that is not tarnished, that is not sullied, that is not compromised, but is still pure, pristine, and perfect. Only then could you come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In paragraph I, I'm just going to read these two lines, then we're going to go on. Now, it's important to know, Rabbi Nachman did not write Likutei Maharan. Rabbi Nachman did not write anything. In fact, Rabbi Nachman instructed that his teachings not be committed to writing. His Talmud Mufak, his primary disciple, Rabbi Nassan, committed most of his teachings to writing. So this is an editorial note from Rabbi Nassan. Look at paragraph I. It says, V'hissi Rabbi Nuzal. So this is Rabbi Nassan, quoting that Rabbi Nachman of Breslov used to say often, Ma'od lelechim ha-Torah hazos, that this is Rabbi Nachman's primary teachings. Ki hu yisod gadol lechol mi sherotzel hiskarev la'Hashem Yisbarach. This is a very important yisod, a very important idea and ideal for anyone who wants to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ulaval ye'avad olomar legamrei chas v'shalom. And that one chas v'shalom not literally lose their world. What does that mean? Look what he writes. Most people who have a strained relationship with God and are distant and far from God, it's an incredible idea. He says most people who are distanced from God, it's not because they don't believe. Every Jew believes, right? Every Jew believes, even if they don't admit that they believe, or even if they don't practice their beliefs. Every belief is part of our spiritual DNA. So Rabbi Nachman says, so what is it? Why do some people have difficulty? It's because they're unhappy. It's machmas mara shechor va'atzos, machmas shenoflim bedaitam, machmas shirom ba'atzmam godel kilkulam shekilkulam ma'asim kol. Most people who struggle with their emuna, says Rabbi Nachman, is at the end of the day because they're not really happy with who they are. And why are they not happy with who they are? This is not necessarily a clinical state. Sometimes it's a clinical state. But why are most people not happy with who they are? Because we tend to have an unhealthy obsession with focusing on our shortcomings and faults and not focusing on our good and our accomplishments. So there's a lot more to say on this. But what I want you to take away from this Rabbi Nachman is Rabbi Nachman teaches us is the incredible power of perspective. And Rabbi Nachman says the power of perspective, according to Rabbi Nachman, is really twofold. Od ma'at ve'in rasha, there's the power of perspective and how we focus on the other. Rabbi Nachman says when you look at the other, you could see one of two things. You could see, and there are many people who are incredibly astute and incredibly talented on pointing out all of the shortcomings of the other. It's like a skill set. It's not just like a gift from Shamayim. Right? Within 10 seconds, they could tell you every single thing that is wrong with you. Very often they're accurate also. Sometimes it's helpful to have a person who gives you real feedback in life. There's no question. Rabbi Nachman is telling us, don't be that person. Don't be that person who's always critical. Don't be that person who's always cynical. Don't be that person who always sees the worst in the other. Rather, Rabbi Nachman says, exercise your power of positive perspective. Va'od ma'at ve'in rasha. Yes, You meet a person, it's very easy. The truth is, many of us have our faults and our shortcomings on our sleeves. There's no question about that. But when you see me and when I see you, our goal is not to judge one another by our shortcomings and our faults. Our goal is to be able to see in one another, ultimately, the good, the positive. Rabbi Nachman says, that same standard is not just an effect for the other, but that standard is the same way that we're supposed to what? To view ourselves as well. To see the good within, the power of perspective when we look in the mirror. Yes, should I see my shortcomings? Should I see my faults? Of course, it's always important to be ever cognizant of your shortcomings and faults because you can never hope to correct them if you don't know them or if you sweep them under the rug. But don't spend your life unhealthily obsessing over this. You know, you have to, it's not a sustainable model. You know, in pre-war Europe, so there were two schools of Musar thought. There was the school of Shiflos HaAdam and Gadlos HaAdam, a school of thought that focused, again, on the lowliness of man. Perhaps the center for this was Nirvaduk. Nirvaduk was known for Shiflos HaAdam, lowliness of man. We're nothing, we're nothing, we're nothing. And Gadlos HaAdam, greatness of man. Interestingly enough, after the war, it's fascinating to see that the world, or the school of thought of Shiflos HaAdam, did not really rebound. It's interesting. There's still an Avadik, and there's still that school of thought. I'm telling you now, this is just my own opinion, it's not a sustainable model. It is not a sustainable model. You can't expect people to think of themselves as nothing and still feel good about themselves, become productive members of society, and feel good about others. We only grow is through Gadlos HaAdam. Rabbi Nachman is saying again, but sometimes Gadlos HaAdam, people take it too far, and they only focus on their positives, not on their negatives, not on their weaknesses. No, we have to count down both things simultaneously. But Rabbi Nachman teaches us the power of perspective, to view the other, see the good in the other, and ultimately, again, see the good in myself. Now, why is this important? So go to the next page. Let's talk a little bit more about this perspective, then we're going to tie this all back into love, and then we're going to conclude. So I want to take you back a little bit to Parshas Korach. So remember again, in the beginning of Parshas Korach, so Korach and all of his followers, Korach was really the ringleader, so instigated a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. So what do they say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Hamath, now this actually is a conversation between Moshe and Dathan and Aviram, but the truth is, Dathan and Aviram are the mouthpiece of Korach. So whatever they're saying, they heard from Korach. So Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, extends the olive branch, tries to go ahead and make shalom. So they say back to Moshe, Hamaat ki elisolam eretz zaz chalav udvash, lamisir amidbar ki tistarer alinu gam histera. So they say to Moshe, Moshe, what have you done for us? What have you done for us? You didn't. It's not enough that you didn't let us go into Eretz Yisrael. Then they're blaming Moshe, right? Remember, the parasha before was the Chita Meraglim, the sin of the spies. But nevertheless, they're blaming Moshe for the fact that they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. So not only did you not bring us into Eretz Yisrael, but now you're even trying to rule over us. Aflo el eretz zavas chalav u'devash heve usanu. You didn't even bring us into the land. Vatitein lanu nachalas sadeva kerem. You didn't give us a field. You didn't give us vineyards. Ha'imeha anashim ha'im tinaker lo na'ala. Moshe, leave us alone. We are not talking to you. We're not meeting you. We have absolutely no interest in conversation. You failed us. Vayicha l'moshe ma'od vayomer al Hashem. Al tefen el min chasam. So Moshe says something amazing. Moshe gets angry, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not turn to their offerings. Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, I didn't even take a donkey from them. Lo hari osias echamim, I didn't wrong any of them. Ve'yom Moshe al-Korach, fine. Ve'yom Moshe al-Korach, ato v'chal adas chayu lefnei Hashem, ato v'hem uva'aron machar. And finally, Moshe Benin throws down the gauntlet. I'll see you tomorrow. God will decide who is correct. Now, there's something very intriguing about this, which is a fundamental behavioral shift in Moshe Rabbeinu. This is not the first time that Klal Yisrael, that our ancestors, got themselves into trouble. Normally there's a script. What's the script? Klal Yisrael gets themselves into trouble, and then what happens? Oh, excellent. Moshe Rabbeinu always advocates, right? The paradigmatic example of this is we're at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu is one day delayed. You know, it's hard to imagine this. One day. First of all, we're not even punctual people to begin with, right? So the notion that Moshe Rabbeinu is one day delayed, and then what? And then they build the golden, we go crazy. You know what the Gemara compares the Chet Egel to? The Gemara compares in the golden calf, like a chasan and kala, like a bride and groom under the chuppah, and the bride commits adultery underneath the chuppah. Right? Meaning it is the greatest relationship trespass that one could ever possibly imagine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mamish is ready to lose it with Klal Yisrael. Heref mimenu va'ash midein. It's done. It failed experiment. I tried to make them into a people. It's not going to work. Let me destroy them. Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll build up through you. And Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he do? Rav Shalom, calm down. Calm down. Right? What are the Egyptians going to say? It's going to be okay. You're difficult. The truth is, what Moshe Rabbeinu really always says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, your expectations are way too high. Right? Meaning, you have to be more realistic in your expectations. An incredible yisod in relationships in general, that if you set expectations too high, those with whom you are in a relationship will always fail you and will always disappoint you. So, Rabbi Shalom, you have to readjust your expectations. And this happens over and over and over again. Every single time Klal Yisrael does something silly, even by the Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu always intervenes. And yet it struck me that here by Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't intervene. Here, after Dasan and Aviram say this to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu says, fine, see you tomorrow. See you tomorrow. Meet me here tomorrow. Literally throws down the gauntlet and will let HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide. It's almost like Moshe Rabbeinu throws down the gloves and says, okay, we're going to do it. Why? Why is there a Moshe Rabbeinu paradigm shift? Why doesn't he advocate on behalf of the people like he's done all of the times beforehand? I think it's because Moshe Rabbeinu realized that there was something profoundly broken that occurred over here. Look at number 13. The Medrash writes, the Korach, Shepikeach hayamara'a l'shtus hazeh. So everybody's bothered. The Medrash says, Korach was a smart man. Korach was a holy man. Korach was a part of the family of Kahas. Kahas was entrusted with which sacred task? Carrying the arrow. So again, that speaks to his spiritual standing. So how could it be that Korach, who was such a wise man, how could he have done something so silly and foolish? To which the Medrash says, these next two words are very important. Elo, Eina Hita'aso. Literally, what Eina Hita'aso means what? His eye deceived him. And now the Medrash goes on to say, Ra shal shalas geduli omedes heimenu. He saw that he was going to have future descendants who were great. The Medrash goes on to say that he was right. He saw a future descendant by the name of Shmuel Hanavi. And as it writes in Tehillim, that again, Shmuel was just as great as Moshe and Aaron in his own way. As the Korach says to himself, if at the end of the day I'm going to have a descendant like Shmuel, so I need to go ahead and what? I need to go ahead and seize the reins of greatness in order to allow that to happen. So Korach thinks, you know, sometimes the most dangerous people are the people who think that they're waging a holy war, the people who think that they're doing something in the name of God. The greatest atrocities throughout the history of mankind have been committed in the name of God. So Korach thinks that, again, here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending me a message. I see greatness coming forth from my family. That will not happen unless, of course, I seize the reins from Moshe Rabbeinu. But that Lashon of the Medrash, Eina Hita'aso, his eye deceived him, is a very interesting Lashon. Take a look at number 14. Perhaps there's a different understanding of that phrase. There's an amazing pasuk in Parsha Shmos. And when you look at it, most times it's very nondescript. What does the pasuk say? V'anshei kodesh tihiyunli. Literally, you shall be holy people to me. Ubasar basode trefa lo sochelu. Bakel tashlichon also. So you should be holy to me, don't eat the trefa. What's a trefa? If an animal is killed by another predatory animal, or by a predatory animal, the animal dies without shechita, without ritual slaughter, you can't eat the carcass. Fine. There's an obvious question on the pasuk, which is what? Why does the Torah have to tell me that I should give it to my dog? Meaning, who cares what I do with it? So whether I give it to the dog, whether I sell it to the Gentile, whether I give it to my Gentile neighbor as a gift, what is it? Or I choose to throw it out in the garbage. What does it matter what I do with it? What only matters is that what? I don't eat it. So why does it have to say, La'kelev tashlichon ososa? I want to share with you now an incredible parish that's going to change your life. Look what he writes over here. Number 15, the Das Zikinim writes. Remember, the Das Zikinim is a commentary of the Tosafist. The Tosafist not only wrote a commentary on the Gemara, Tosas, but they also wrote a commentary on the Chumash. Look at this. Me'achar sha'kelev maser nafsho ala trefa. Since the dog tried to go ahead and protect the animal that was torn apart by the predatory animal, kishabaha zev letarfa, when the wolf, he uses the wolf as an example of a predatory animal, came to attack it, lo siya kafui tova kinegdo, don't be an ingrate by the dog, shekishir lecha trefa shetashlichi alav b'schar sheshamat ata shal nitrefa. Let me tell you this outside. Taz again says something absolutely amazing. When it says, lakhelev tashlichu noso, you should throw it to the dog. Says the Das Zikinim, which dog are we referring to? It's referring to the sheep dog. You know, everyone knows, you know from your extensive experience shepherding, that when you have the flock, you always have a dog that protects the flock. What's the job of that dog? to scare away predatory animals. Says the Dasa Kanan, if one of my animals was attacked and killed by a predatory animal, then what does that mean? Who wasn't doing their job? The sheepdog. The sheepdog was asleep on the job, right? The sheepdog literally didn't do its job. Says the Dasa Kanan, in that moment that the sheepdog fails you, what should you do? You should give it the carcass as a reward. Reward for what? Reward for all of the times that it did its job properly. Reward for all of that times that it was your trusted companion. Reward for all of that times that it did trust the Hakadosh. You know what the Dasa Kanan is saying? That when the dog fails you, so almost the human emotional reflexive response is focus on the failure. But instead, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu to us, in the moment that your dog fails you, don't focus on the one time it failed. Instead, what? Focus on all of the times that it served you well. Focus on all of the times that it was there. Focus on all of the times, ultimately, that it did do its mandated mission. Focus on all the times that it, so to speak, was Moser Nefesh to go ahead and protect the flock. And my friends, you know, what is true by a dog is true by people as well. When people fail us, the emotional reflexive response is to focus on failure. What the Torah is trying to sensitize us to is that moment when people fail you, instead of focusing and obsessing over the failure, which is what so many of us do, in those hurtful moments of failure, take a step back, take a deep breath, and focus on all of the times that that person has been good for me. Person has a problem with their shalom bias. Person doesn't like what their spouse did to them. I'm a little bit outnumbered, so I'm not going to talk about shalom bias over here. I was going to say my wife, but I'll say my husband didn't do something that I don't like. At the end of the day, instead of focusing again on that failure, what about all the wonderful years? What about all the wonderful experiences? A friend is not there for me in a time of need when I really needed them. It's a failure in the friendship. What about all the other times when ultimately that friend was Moser Nefesh, that friend sacrificed for this relationship? Lakelev Tashlich also tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the beauty of our Torah. You understand how beautiful this is? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us such an incredible gift that gives us, this is the manual for successful living, the manual. Torah tells us in those moments of failure, don't just focus on the failure, but look at the failure in context of all of the wonderful things that have happened throughout the years. Loop this back. This is why Moshe Rabbeinu does not intervene on behalf of Korach. Because if you go back up to number 12, you know, the Mefarshim point out, you ever wonder to yourself, how did Moshe Rabbeinu feel after the sin of the Meraglim? Right? How did Moshe Rabbeinu feel after the Chita Meraglim? And the Maral and others point out that Moshe Rabbeinu felt like an abysmal failure. He felt like a failure. It wasn't his fault. Every single good leader takes responsibility for what happens with his or her constituents, even if it's not his or her fault. Every good leader says the buck stops with me. So if something doesn't go right, I wasn't my fault at all. It happened on my watch. And if it happened on my watch, I do bear some responsibility. So what happens in number 12? Dustin and Aviyah come to Moshe and say, Moshe, you couldn't even take us into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to himself, you know, I know I couldn't take it. You don't think that hurts me? You don't think I'm going to live every single day for the next 40 years with that pain in my neshama that I couldn't deliver my flock into the promised land? Of course I will. But don't you remember any of the other good things I did for you? Don't you remember the fact that I stood up to Paro on your behalf? Don't you remember the fact that I lobbied your case? Don't you remember the fact that I sacrificed? You know, Moshe Rabbeinu had nothing in life. Moshe Rabbeinu had a wife, but he did not have a marriage. Moshe Rabbeinu had children, but he was not a father. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up every trapping of normal life to be a Manig Yisrael. Don't you guys, I got you the man. I saved you from the Egel. I saved you from the Slav. I saved the nation after the catastrophic event of the Mar. Don't you recognize any of that? Don't you remember any of that? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know what? If a person lacks proper perspective, such a nation like that is doomed. If a group lacks proper perspective, that group is a cancer. That group has to be eradicated. That group has to be removed. Because if you begin to lack proper perspective in life, the very fabric of life and the very fabric of the national condition begin to unravel. Perhaps that's why Moshe Rabbeinu does not intervene on behalf of Korach and his assembly during this particular machlokus, because he realized as much as it pained him, Korach had to go, Dasan and Aviram had to go, the followers had to go, because when you lack the ability to see proper perspective, when you lack the ability to see things in full context, people like that ultimately will only see the negative, will only see that which is bad, and people like that ultimately will be a cancer within the midst of the people. Hence, Moshe Rabbeinu does not intervene. So what comes out from everything we've discussed until now, this will conclude. So what you really begin to see, and remember, let's just review what we've done so far, and then we're going to bring it together. So we began our shiur today by speaking about the various different types of loves. We didn't go into depth, but we just spoke about them. Spousal love, familial love, interpersonal love, self-love, loving the one who is different, loving the divine, and even the material love. We then went ahead and focused on the concept, as expressed Rabbi Nachman, that the most important yisod in life is proper perspective. Va'od ma'at ve'ein rasha. Person always has to find the od ma'at, the little bit that is good. It's true with others, and it's true with myself. It's true with myself as well. You always have to find the od ma'at. Moshe Rabbeinu can't intervene with Korach and his followers because they realize that what? Because they realize they lack proper perspective. And without proper perspective, again, you're doomed. Without proper perspective, again, nothing gets off the ground. If all you see is the Rasha, but you don't see the od ma'at, if all you see is the negative and you only see the positive, if all you see is the failure of the sheepdog, but you never see all of the times that he came through, then ultimately you are doomed. As a Kodesh Baruch Hu tries to impress upon us, lakhelef tashlichuno, so why is this important for love? And with this we'll conclude. This is important for love because at the end of the day, in order to establish any kind of love in life, the most important thing, the most important building block, the first stone for foundation of love in life is proper positive perspective. PPP. Proper positive perspective. If a person ultimately wants to love themselves, which is so important, being Adam La'atzmo, as Rabbi Nachman said, Od Ma'at. You have to be able, yes, to recognize your shortcomings and to recognize that which is negative, but equally as important is you have to be able to see that which is good. If you're going to love the other, and by the way, whether that other is spousal love, whether that other is familial love, whether that other is loving the one who is different, whatever type of love of the other it is, you have to have proper positive perspective. You have to be able to always see the good, even when there's a lot of negativity and difficulty that sometimes obscures all that good. And if you're going to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we'll speak about this more on Tuesday, if you're going to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you're going to live God, you have to have proper perspective as well. You see, we would all agree that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does stuff to us that's not very good. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does stuff to us that's not very nice. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does stuff to us that hurts. It hurts. And as much as I want to believe Gamzu Latova, right, Gamzu Latova, that's also for the good, sometimes I say to myself, there's no way this is Latova. There is no positive, this is any good. And sometimes it takes a while, Gamzu Latova sometimes takes years and years and years to be able to see the good that comes out of catastrophic and difficult circumstances. But one thing I would tell you is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does something to you that hurts, that stings, sometimes we get a patch from above and we're left a little bit bewildered and they take a step back and say, you know what? I know this hurts, but what about all of the good? What about all of the good? Because you see, sometimes what happens is when life doesn't go the way that we want, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does something that I, quote unquote, don't like, that colors everything else. And I forget about the fact, maybe I have my health, maybe I have my parnasa, maybe I have a loving marriage, maybe I have good children, maybe I have good friends, maybe I have a good spouse, whatever it is, maybe you have one of those things, maybe you have all of those things. It doesn't mean that the thing that's difficult hurts any less, but it's the power of perspective. So as you go through this 3-day journey in Yeretz Hashem, learning about love, and hopefully creating greater energy and greater passion and greater intensity into all the different aspects of love, keep in mind positive positive perspective. Ultimately, keep in mind this idea that the perspective we keep, the positive perspective in the way we look at the other, the way we look at ourselves, we look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who serves as the foundation for all of our different life loves. And I give you all the bracha that I'm Hashem in the schos of spending really 3 days, it's quite incredible, spending 3 days learning to try how to intensify and amplify multiple feelings of life ava, of life love, that you should all be zocha to Meretz Hashem emerge from this limud, emerge from this course, emerge from this course of study with a greater love for yourselves, with a greater love for one another, and with a greater love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu.